many of you young folks have taken a report card home that had 5 A's and 1 C and had dad and mother make their first comments about the C and say very little, if anything, about the A's? How many of you that are here tonight remember the name Chris Weber? And if you do, why do you remember it? Chris Weber, if I remember right, is the player for the Michigan basketball team who made a tremendous mistake in the NCAA finals this year, calling a timeout when the team didn't have any more timeouts, and cost Michigan the possibility, at least, of tying the game and maybe eventually winning that game. And yet, Chris Weber, down through the year, no doubt won many games for Michigan, was an outstanding player, played better than most players in the United States, and yet we tend to remember the one mistake that he made in that one game. I really believe, young folks, that we have a tendency to major in minors. We have a tendency to concentrate too much on those things that are not so good and overlook the things that are so good. If each one of you tonight were to take a long look at your own dad or mother, you could find some things that were not perfect. And yet think about all the good things that you could find in their lives. If you looked at anybody in the work of the church, your teachers, your preacher, your elders, any of us, you'll find some things that could be improved, maybe some things you don't like. But if you're honest, you'll find that in most instances there are many, many good things, and there are more good things than there are bad. I believe there is a tendency for young people, particularly as you come to the time of graduation, to either have an attitude of being discouraged or an attitude of being encouraged. There's probably no middle ground. And it all depends on how you look at things and how you add things up and how you come to the conclusions that you draw. The story is told that back several years ago, when people traveled mainly in buggies and wagons, that there was a fellow sitting at the edge of a certain village. And as he was sitting there, a wagon loaded with all the people's goods came by and stopped and said, "We're coming into town. What kind of people live here?" And this wise old fellow said, "What kind of people did you leave?" And they said, "Oh, we left some of the meanest and ornerest, worst people in the world. They'd do anything. They'd lie to you. They'd mistreat you." He said, "You'll find people here just like that." A few minutes later, another wagon came up with evidently all of the folks' goods on it. They were coming into town, and they stopped and asked this same fellow, "What kind of people live here?" And he said, "What kind of people did you leave?" And they said, "Oh, we left some of the finest people in the world. We left good neighbors. We left people who would do anything for you. We left people who would take the shirt off their back and give it to you." He said, "You will find the same kind of people here." You see the point? We find about what we want to. And we draw the conclusions about the way we want to draw them. I would be less than honest with you as a younger generation if I said to you tonight that I think everything is going well in the world. I don't think it is. I would be less than honest if I told you that I thought everything in the work of the church across the brotherhood was like it ought to be. I don't believe it is. I don't even think we're perfect in our work here. Don't think there's a perfect one among us. I realize that particularly in the case of those of you who are graduating and those who are just a few years under that or behind that, that there have been a lot of things happen in this community that have been discouraging. I've lived here now since moving back in October of 1987, a little over 5.5 years. I'm aware of some of the problems that some of your teachers have had in school and in the community. I remember a few years ago some of the things that were said and about some of your teachers that either resigned or were dismissed. I'm aware of some of the problems that you've even had this year. I'm aware that in the church, when you look at teachers that you have had in your classes, that there have been those that have been disappointing. I recognize that that's true, and I recognize sometimes that you can be very discouraged. But let me reason with you for a few minutes tonight. I think we need to be like the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 8. We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed. Later on at verse 16, he says, "For which cause we faint not." We're not fainting spiritually speaking. We're not discouraged in this. Though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Jesus had 12 apostles. One of them betrayed him, but 11 of them didn't. Now, all of those other apostles made mistakes. In fact, if we looked at the Apostle Peter for a moment, there might be a possibility of remembering him as the one who denied the Lord, but we usually remember him as the one who preached on Pentecost and at the household of Cornelius. The reason for that is we have brought ourselves in the right direction with the Apostle Peter to concentrate on all the good things about his life and not dwell on that one time, and I'm sure it's not the only time, but that one particular time when he made a grievous error. If we just thought about Peter as the apostle that denied Christ, I think we would be majoring in minors. And if we thought about the one apostle who betrayed him, or even if Jesus had thought about just that one apostle, we might become discouraged. He might have become discouraged. But don't you think we need to concentrate on the 11 who did not betray him? And then eventually another one appointed to take the place of Judas and Paul and others who were called apostles in other ways and under circumstances. But just looking at the 12, you could say one of the 12 apostles, one of those so close to him, betrayed him, yes. But 11 of them did not. And if we will think like that, we will not be as discouraged. Elijah is one of the greatest men that ever lived in Bible times. I'm convinced of that. Great enough that when the prophets were to be represented at the transfiguration of Jesus, Elijah was there along with Moses, who no doubt represented the law. Such a great man that Peter on this occasion, maybe again making somewhat of a mistake, said, "Well, Lord, let's build three tabernacles for you and for Moses and for Elijah." And that's when the voice of God came and said, "This is my beloved son. You listen to Jesus. He's different. He's above these men. He's my son." But at least it shows that Elijah was a great man. And yet, if you read in 1 Kings 19, verses 10 through 18, you see one of the most depressed, discouraged preachers that ever lived. Elijah had been told that Jezebel was after him. She was going to get him. She was going to kill him. And he took off running. Although just shortly before that, he had seen the evidence of God, the power of God come in his confrontation with the prophets of Baal. He evidently was concentrating now on that one thing. Here is something that's bad. Look how bad the circumstances are. In fact, he went to the extent in his conversation with God and saying, "God, I'm the only one left. There isn't anybody else that really stands up for the cause of God. I'm the only one left, but I want you to listen to what God said." He said, "Elijah, you get up and turn around and get back there and preach my word. I've got 7,000 who haven't bowed their knee to Baal. Elijah, you're just considering one or two. You're just looking at something that is bad. Jezebel, I tell you what, I wouldn't want her after me." And I've had some that I thought were related to her. "I wouldn't want her after me." But God was saying, "Listen, Elijah, you're just looking at this one. You're just looking at this one situation. I've got 7,000 back there that have not turned their lives over to Baal yet. You get up and get back there and teach the word and do your part. And I think God was saying between the lines, Elijah, you get back there and do your part, and I won't forsake you. I'll do mine, and things will work out in the right way. But Elijah was discouraged. In the early church, there was reason for discouragement in almost every congregation. You take the church over there at Corinth, they had fornication. They had division. They had many other problems that could be mentioned. You even look at the seven churches of Asia Minor described in chapters 2 and 3 of Revelation. At least six of them had problems. One of them even had somebody in the congregation that was compared to Jezebel. They had people that condoned the doctrine of the Nicolaitans. They had others that condoned other false doctrines. They had problems. Even Ephesus had left its first love, was not on fire, did not have the energy to get involved as it ought to. And it is true, Jesus through John said, if you don't do something about this, your candlestick could be removed. But he told them what you need to do is to overcome. And in almost all of those cases, if you'll notice clearly, Jesus not only pointed out some problems, but he pointed out some strong points. What he was trying to get them to do was to quit majoring in minors and quit emphasizing these things that were problems, and to think about the good things and be encouraged. When you and I look about us today, even in America, which I believe to be the greatest country in the world, we see that there are problems. I think a person would have to be hiding his head in the sand if he did not recognize that there are problems. Problems on the streets, problems in the workplace, problems in the community. As you young folks get out and you go on either to higher education or you go out into the workforce, you're going to face some problems that you haven't faced exactly like these before. But along with all the problems, we've got a lot of good things too. And I think perhaps we need to be like a man by the name of Asaph, who wrote the 73rd Psalm. In the earlier part of that psalm, about the first 16 verses, he is living in self-pity. He uses one image that I especially like. He says, I felt like my feet were slipping. And if you've ever lived where you had a creek and a creek bank and tried to climb out of a creek on a muddy bank, you know what he's talking about. You take one step and slide back two. There's a song, I think, that says that. And I know what that means. I've tried it. He said, my feet were well nigh slipped. And if you read the context, the problem is he's looking at the evil men and seeing them seemingly be successful. He said, well, I see all these fellows out there. They don't love God. They don't care about him. And they are successful. And I just feel like I've been forsaken, until he comes to verse 17. He says, until I went into the sanctuary of God. Then understood I their end. And he comes back and uses the image of the slippery places again, and he says, they are the ones who have their feet on slippery places. Folks, in the words of the songs, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. And a lot of times, what seems to be success for this person out there that seems to be evil for us may not be success. And we may be majoring in minors and looking at that from the wrong standpoint. When he went into it, and when he says, I went into the sanctuary of God, that's a way of saying, until I began to look at it from God's vantage point. And then I realized that their feet are the ones who are on slippery places. And that I have got the foundation of God, in our case in the New Testament, the foundation of Christ, and I can stand on that, and there is no power that can take me away from God other than yielding myself to it and turning away myself. I would highly recommend that all of us read that 73rd Psalm from time to time and realize that if we're not careful, we look at life from the wrong vantage point, and we need perhaps to go into the sanctuary of God. We need to look at it from God's presence and God's standpoint and realize that though there are things that concern us, there are problems that happen, that we allow ourselves many times without thinking to concentrate on the minor things, at least number-wise, instead of looking at the major things that are involved. I would imagine tonight that our young people who are graduating can look back and think of some peers who didn't live like they should, who had some problems. I would imagine that there are some that are in your class that will not be walking across the stage tomorrow night. There may be some that are not even in school now that were with you 4 years ago. But let me remind you that there are about 100 that will be walking across the stage. A few did not do what they should have done, but many have done what they should have done. And I imagine as all walk across the stage, as you sit there knowing the lives of your peers, that you can think of some things in the lives of some of those that are not what they ought to be. But I also believe that you can think of more good things in the lives of those friends of yours and students, regular students with you, if you'll just take the time. And I'm sure if you let your mind wander back that you will think of some things that some of your teachers did that were not good. Some of them that set the wrong example at times. But I believe if you'll stop and consider the overall picture that you'll find so many teachers who have tried to do the right thing and who have tried to set the right example. I don't think I have ever been a place in working in the church where I've had more respect in general for a school system than here. One of the reasons is we have a large number of New Testament Christian teachers in our school system. And even those who are not members of the New Testament church, as we understand it, in many cases are at least people who fear God and respect God, at least in a general sense. And I'm saying to you tonight as young people that as you look at these cases where there have been teachers who've done things they shouldn't do and have disappointed you, I can point you to tens and 20s and 30s and maybe hundreds of teachers who have not been involved in things that are questionable. And we need to be careful that we don't major in minors. I think all of us are aware that during the last year here, we've had an unusually high number of divorces, breakup of homes within this congregation. In some instances, innocent people have suffered. In some instances, people may have brought the suffering upon themselves. And I don't mean by either of those statements to be a judge. But I know firsthand from some of the things that I hear personally and some of the things that I hear said in other ways that some of you young people have become discouraged as you've looked in some cases at those who stood in the classroom and taught you and then did not practice what they taught. But listen to me, young people, and don't fail to hear what I'm about to say. When you can mention three or four or five families where problems like this have happened, I can show you 200 in this congregation where they've not happened. I remember, I think it was a little over a year ago, we honored our older members who had lived together 50 years, and if I remember the numbers, we had 23 couples and 14 widows or widowers. I would guess, and this is just a guess, I would guess that within our membership of this congregation, we have at least 100 families that have crossed that 25-year mark. Now, if you want to just pick out the minors and major in those, you can be discouraged. If you want to look at the reality, you can be encouraged. Remember, Jesus had one apostle that betrayed him, but he had 11 that didn't. And as you and I look at our friends and our associates and our teachers and those that we respect, we're going to be disappointed. I could tell you tonight about two preachers particularly who were very close to me, one a co-worker, one who stayed in my home as he conducted a gospel meeting. We found out a little later that both of them were living lives of hypocrites. They were rotten to the core in what they were doing. And I'll tell you, I was disappointed. I was discouraged. I still think about them. But If I had the time tonight, could give you a list that long and longer of friends of mine, preacher friends of mine, who have remained faithful to Christ and who have remained strong and have lived strong moral lives. I can either be discouraged by concentrating on that one C on the report card, or I can be encouraged by realizing that there are five A's there for which to be thankful, and then begin to work to try to help if that other one can be made better. Folks, it's all in how we look at it. From the time of the Garden of Eden, people have made mistakes. There have been those who have fallen. There have been those who have stood strong for what was right. And whether or not you and I are discouraged or encouraged will be dependent mainly upon how we look at the overall situation. Young people, don't major in minors. These things may discourage. There will be things in your life that will discourage you. There will probably be something tomorrow, next day, that will be discouraging. But overall, I believe with the Apostle Paul in this passage in 2 Corinthians 4 that we can say, oh yes, we're troubled, but we're not down. There are problems, but there's still more good things. We may be discouraged. We may be distressed. We may be down from time to time, and all of us are. There are our ups and downs in life. But when we put it all together, and we look at all the good people that are there and all the good things that are there, I believe we have reason to be encouraged. And that those of you who are graduating tomorrow night and then the 28th, and walk across that stage and receive your diploma with your chin up, not too high in the air, but with it up, and believe that with God's help and with the help of all the people who love you and are behind you and will help you in any way that you can be successful. Don't let these minors discourage you in life. Don't major in minors. Put the Lord on your side and the good people on your side, and I know what the result will be. And I would close tonight by simply saying this: there's nothing in the world that you can do as a young person or that you as a parent can do for your young person in your family that's more important and any greater than being a Christian. A real Christian. Somehow or other, the real Christian can take all these knocks and put them aside and overcome, and can have a life that is worthwhile. That's just another reason. We encourage you to come to be baptized if you've not. Come back if you've been away, as together we stand and sing.
Jesus, Father, tenderly upon your ear, sweet his cry of love and pity.